You are listening to the podcast That's Life in Sweden, or as we say in Swedish, Sånt är livet i Sverige, with me, your host, Lisa Orsimäki. Today, I'm speaking with Professor Ralph Peker. He's the chief physician and professor in urology at Sahlgrenska University Hospital here in Gothenburg or Göteborg, Sweden. Welcome to the program, Ralph.
Thank you very much, Lisa.
And how are you?
I'm fine. I just had to postpone the interview 1 hour because I had to assist the younger colleagues in an operation theater.
Yes, and that's quite fine. The life of a surgeon. Now, I'm absolutely fascinated by your background, and so to get a sense of who is Professor Ralph Peker, can you begin by sharing some of your background and particular highlights of your amazing journey from a successful career as a musician to the world of academia, medicine, research and teaching?
Well, I got fascinated by music at a very early stage, to a degree that my grades were very poor. So I, at the age of some 13, 14 or 15 years old, I never thought that I should even go to high school. And I very much doubt that my grade was sufficient for it. But the only thing I did was I played the guitar and I played the guitar and I played the guitar. And sometimes I just took short breaks in playing the guitar only to rehearse singing or writing music. And so I just felt after a couple of years that I maybe should go to high school anyhow, because I then felt motivated to do so. And then the grades became very high, so I thought, why don't I just continue with some other education? And I cannot really say why. I don't know the reason why I just chose medicine. I could probably have chosen anything else, but I chose medicine. And so it so happened that I was lucky to get a couple of hit songs a little less than 45 years ago, and that made it possible for me to have music as a living. Parallel to that, I studied medicine. So I didn't have to take any loans. I just played in the evenings and in the weekends, and I studied medicine during daytime. And so since then, I have continued doing so, and I will, in fact, celebrate now the 1st of April, upcoming 1st of April. I will celebrate that I have had 50 years as a professional musician, because the first time I got paid to play was April the 1st in 1974. And then other things happened as well. After the successful career with Snowstorm, with the hit songs, I started playing with a good acoustic musician, a very skilled singer, a guitarist by the name Lasse Kronér.
Okay.
And I made several hundred concerts with him, and then he became a very famous leader of TV programs and many other things. I still play with him occasionally, not that very often. And so I was also lucky to be chosen to represent Sweden in the Eurovision Song Contest in 1987. We won that what's called now called Mello.
Yes.
In 1986,
yes.
Together with Lotta Engberg.
Right.
So I have had some very nice moments in music during these 50 years. And the most wonderful thing I do now is that I perform together with my daughter. She's a very good singer. So I write the songs and I play the guitar and then we play together every now and then. So that's the summary of the music career. And then parallel to that, I have had the work at Sahlgrenska University Hospital. After having finished medical school, I embarked upon a career as a general surgeon. And after a couple of years, I realized that I really have to specialize into a certain field of surgery, and I chose urology. So last 30 years, or a little more than that, I've only worked with urological surgery. I've also been very interested in teaching. So I also launched an academic career, and I wrote my thesis in 1999, and then I continued working with research and became a professor of urology in 2011.
Mm.
And so now I see that it feels a little strange, because now I just feel that I'm beginning to understand the job, and now I will soon be retired or retarded or both.
Okay, all right. So
it feels a little strange, but I still enjoy this work at the hospital. Not to the same degree as I enjoy playing with my daughter, but I enjoy it a lot. I enjoy having the students, and I'm just in the middle of the 50th semester in a row.
Wow.
I'm not saying 15th.
No.
I really say 50th.
Yes, 50.
So it clearly points towards that I am very interested in education.
Absolutely.
I know that we have one thing in common, you and I, Lisa. We both had the luck to be appointed excellent teachers 6 years ago.
Yes, and I will ask you about that, but I'm just thinking back to the hit you had in 1980 with Snowstorm called Sommarnatt.
Yes.
Now, the thing is that when I heard it the first, I've been now back in Sweden for the last 10 years, and I think I've heard it every summer. You know, you can hear it, someone is playing or singing it. And I would have never guessed it was first played in 1980. And so, you know, I'm so curious, because you say you also write music. How did that song come about? And considering it's part of Swedish music history, what do you think made the song such a hit and that it is still popular today?
It is very difficult to say, really. If I really knew the recipe for that, I would have written many more songs like that. But one of my best friends, he wrote that song, and he wrote it, he writes many nice songs, and I also write songs. Normally, we write songs based upon our own experiences or something perhaps we've heard, but just this song, he wrote right out of the blue sky. He has no experience of driving such cars, or experienced events like that. He just wrote it,
yeah.
And we really don't know the reason why it became so very popular. And just this summer, I used to sing it a lot. I've sang it for all the years. I am forced to do it every time I perform, but I don't do it any longer. My daughter sings it now.
Oh, okay.
And so we were invited to Swedish television now last summer to try to perform the song.
Yeah,
she sang, I played the guitar, but one of the ideas with inviting was that they wanted me to explain, to answer the very question that you just brought forward. Well, I told them the same thing as I just recently told you. I don't know. I really don't know.
Regardless, it doesn't matter, but it is such a tune. It's so catchy. It's something that you cannot forget. So, I'm just blown away when I found out that, you know, you work at the university like I do. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And then, of course, I have looked it up on YouTube. And, you know, it reminds me a little bit of the sound, Aussie sounds from that time. We have someone called Jimmy Barnes and Cold Chisel. It even has got the feel, a little bit of a feel of AC/DC. But having said that, it's an absolute fabulous, catchy tune. So you actually did not leave your career as a musician when you decided to study. You used it simultaneously.
I had to. I had to continue. Because that was my job. I had to earn money to pay the rent, and so I continued. But then I also continued after having graduated. I just diminished work with music a little when my kids were young, because I had to be a father for them, so. I diminished playing and singing a little during some 10 or 12 years. But after that, I started off at the same intensity again.
What was your study about?
My thesis was on inflammatory conditions in the urinary tract and various kinds of surgical remedy for such inflammatory conditions, and also on molecular biological aspects, protein chemistry, and also studies on the transcriptional level.
And your research is, of course, around reconstructive surgery. What does that involve?
Well, many persons have never heard about what a urologist really do. They possibly think that we operate on the prostate and maybe we remove kidney stones or something like that, but we do so many more things. And to be a reconstructive urologist, there are so many aspects of urology that demands the contribution from a reconstructive surgeon. For example, if you remove the bladder due to cancer or something, you have to do some kind of reconstruction in order to expel urine. And we have the trauma, accidents, where parts of the urinary tract is destroyed. We have traffic accidents and other kinds of working place accidents. Gunshot injury, knife injury. We have malformations that necessitate reconstruction. We have inflammatory conditions, as I mentioned. We have some kind of severe neurological disease with repercussion on the urinary tract that we have to fix. So to be reconstructive surgeons, we are definitely not without work.
Yes, and it's very challenging.
Yeah, and it sometimes it encompasses the implantation of some artificial stuff, and sometimes we have to use bowel to incorporate in the urinary tract in order to fix things.
What is the role of robotics? And, you know, I'm thinking of artificial intelligence. What's the role of robotics in surgery?
Well, we have a profound experience of robotically assisted surgery since 16 or 17 years ago. We took up robotically assisted. It is mostly used to do so-called radical prostatectomy, and that that is removing the entire prostate gland due to cancer. We do that several times a week, but it is also increasingly used to perform other procedures, reconstructive procedures on the kidneys, or even removal of a kidney due to cancer, or a part of the kidney due to cancer. So we use robotically assisted surgery very frequently.
So just a question about the prostate cancer among men. Is there a particular, why do men suffer from prostate cancer? Is it because of age, or is it, has lifestyle something to do with it?
Well, age is a predominant factor. We never see prostate cancer in younger men. We do have cancers that might affect younger persons, such as kidney cancer, and most of all testicular cancer, which is it's the disease of the young man. But when it comes to prostate cancer that you asked me about, it affects older men, and sometimes even in the higher segment of middle age, you can have that. And so it is definitely, but it is something that has to do with age, but also genetic factors play a role. And we also see that some lifestyle factors might play a certain part when it comes to the development of that cancer and many other cancers. But age is the far beyond comparison the most predominant factor.
And of course, there is the challenge of having men having themselves checked.
Yes, I acknowledge that, but we are beginning to get better. We are now trying to launch organized prostate testing, and in the hope that it shall be adopted throughout our country, throughout the entire Sweden.
Really complex, really and a very different life from being a musician and writing songs.
Yeah, it's different, very different life, yes. But I have been so comfortable with that mix. I am comfortable to such a degree that I don't even think about it as something strange or weird.
Yes, yes. I think it's fantastic. And of course, you mentioned 2018 when you were the recipient, and as was I at the time, of the Excellent Teacher Title or Award. That is a recognition for teaching excellence. Now, I'm curious why you chose to seek the award, considering you were already a professor. I mean, having your work scrutinized again, so what was your reason?
Well, I think I first must confess that if I had realized how much work it should take to compile all this stuff and to go through the process, I probably would have refrained from seeking that appointment. But the thing is that I was asked to join the Docent Committee in order to just evaluate applications. And then when I sat there and we went through a couple of applications, I realized that my colleagues who had sent in their applications, they were really very experienced and skilled. But I realized that I have, when they wrote, I have taught some 1,000 students up front. I realized, but I have taught 5,000 students, and perhaps more than double the amount of education that several of them. So I really felt that I would also very much like to be an excellent teacher. And then they said to me, You can't be, because you're in the Docent Committee and you're evaluating this. You can't evaluate yourself. And then I said, all right, but I would like to be kicked out of the Docent Committee so I can send in an application as well. And so I did. And the first thing I had was I had the application back with the harsh notice that you can't just send in it like this. It has to be compiled in a very orderly fashion. I think I spent a couple of weeks just to compile everything in an orderly fashion, just in order to get the Docent Committee even consider the application. And so it went out to experts, external experts.
And I was very, very happy and proud by this appointment. And I just realized that it's so much more difficult to achieve an excellent teachership than it is to receive a professorship. Because I'm both a professor and an excellent teacher. I know what it takes to be a professor, and I also know what it takes to become an excellent teacher. So I really say that, take my word for it, it's more difficult.
I take your word for it. I agree with you. So tell me about teaching. What is it about teaching that you find is being rewarding and fun? Or fun?
First of all, we have to acknowledge that my students, they are so hungry for knowledge, and they are so highly motivated. They cannot be compared to kids in elementary school who perhaps is not that very interested in what the teachers would like to teach them. So I have the best students a teacher can ask for. That in itself is very, very rewarding. And to see people grow in my when they are near me, to see them grow, to see my children grow, to see them learn things from me, to see my younger colleagues, even senior consultants, mm-hmm. when I operate together with them, I see they learn. They learn all the time, and I keep teaching them. And also nurse students, and in this case now, undergraduate medical students. To see that is, I can just say that it makes me so very happy to see when they grow. It's just very, very rewarding. And it's also one thing I there with one of my colleagues, Magnus Fovius, we always laugh at ourselves and at each other, because we are mansplainers. You know what a mansplainer is? Someone who always wants to explain things. And my wife, some of my friends, and my kids are sometimes very sick and tired of me, because I have to explain things all the time. But here at Sahlgrenska, the students are very happy, and they want me to explain more and more and more, and I get handsomely paid for it. So it's really, really a golden situation for people like me and my colleague.
What do you think of the role of artificial intelligence, such as ChatGPT or generative artificial intelligence? Are you using those tools, or do you allow your students to use those tools, or do you think they're a waste of time?
I don't use them, but I don't think AI is a waste of time. I just say that it's not part of my philosophy. I think the best thing a student can have is to have me very closely, telling them things and letting them ask me and present their own ideas before me, in order for me to comment on that. So I think my excellence is not based on being in the front when it comes to developing new ideas. in teaching. Indeed, I have respect for teachers working with that, but my excellence is based on something completely different than that. It's a very old kind of excellence that's been around for several thousand years. I am there. I come very prepared, and I let the students know that I'm very happy to be with them, and that I am never bored with teaching them. And the fact that I'm now in my 50th semester in a row, I think it's certainly a very, very stable witness that I really like this job.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, so teaching is something very special. Do you believe anyone can be a teacher?
Well, I do not think that everyone can be a teacher. I do not think that everyone can be a musician. I, for example, I don't think that I could ever become a gardener or a tailor or I think to be very good at a profession, you must have a genuine interest and really be more or less a little obsessed by it, and also fascinated. And I think that in order to become a good teacher, you must be, if not obsessed, at least fascinated and very, very much absorbed by it. I think it's just about the same in almost every job. The fire must be there in order for things to really fly.
Being a physician who's very busy and also a musician on the side, I understand you still are playing, but this time together with your daughter who's singing?
Yes. I play together with her, sometimes just she and I. More often together with a band, a full rock and roll set, so to say. But there are different setups, and I do that all the time, and I find it so very rewarding and fun. I believe that I will stay here for some 3 years or something like that. But then I will. I have now increased working with music in recent years, and I sometimes I think I work a little too much, and so some 3 more years here at the Sahlgrenska University Hospital, and then I think I will thank everyone for having me so many years, and then I will focus exclusively on music.
Ralph, thank you so much, and congratulations for 1st of April.
Well, thank you very much. I really think that this is something worth to celebrate.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Listen, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Lisa.
And you have been listening to the podcast Sånt är livet i Sverige, or in English, That's Life, here in Sweden, with me, Lisa Orsimäki. Till next time, take care of yourself and each other. Bye for now.